Ever felt that nagging heel pain, the kind that just won't quit? Or maybe you know someone who's been sidelined by it.
It's incredibly common.
Yeah, that persistent ache right at the back of your ankle.
Mm-hmm.
It often points to one of the most, well, common yet maybe frequently misunderstood culprits, Achilles tendonitis.
Definitely misunderstood sometimes.
So today we're doing a deep dive into this condition. We want to cut through some of the noise, give you a really clear, comprehensive understanding.
Good plan.
Our mission really is to equip you with the knowledge to understand what Achilles tendonitis is, what causes it, and how it's managed, so you can feel genuinely well-informed.
Yeah.
And all the insights, all the information for this deep dive, it comes straight from the foot education section of orthoeducation.com. It's a fantastic, high-quality, peer-reviewed resource really designed to help people like you understand these musculoskeletal conditions better.
It's a great source.
Just a quick reminder, of course, this deep dive is for general educational purposes. If you're dealing with a problem or you have concerns about your health, please always consult a trained healthcare professional.
Okay.
Crucial point.
Okay, let's unpack this then.
Yeah, what's truly fascinating here, I think, beyond just the name, is how often the sort of subtleties of Achilles tendonitis are missed. People hear tendonitis, they think inflammation, end of story.
Right, just inflammation.
But there's often so much more going on, and understanding those nuances, it can make a huge difference in, you know, how you approach recovery.
Absolutely. So let's start right at the beginning. When we talk about Achilles tendonitis, what are we basically talking about?
Well, generally, it's pain and swelling in that really strong kind of rope-like tendon connecting your calf muscles down to your heel bone.
Okay, but you mentioned nuances. It's not just one thing.
Exactly. It's not monolithic. There are really two main types, and where that pain shows up tells us a lot.
Okay, tech one.
The first is non-insertional Achilles tendonitis. This is sort of the classic picture.
Okay.
The pain and swelling hit you in the main body of the tendon itself, typically about 2 to 6 centimeters above where it actually attaches to your heel bone.
Right, in the middle part.
Exactly. Now, here's a subtle point you mentioned earlier. Sometimes the pain might not even be from the tendon fibers themselves, but from the sheath around the tendon. That's called peritendinitis. Or other times, it's what we call non-insertional tendinosis. This means there's actual microscopic tearing, degeneration within the tendon's collagen fibers. And sometimes that can even feel like a distinct oblong lump if you palpate it.
Gotcha. So inflammation of the sheath or actual changes in the tendon itself in that middle section.
Precisely. Then the second type is insertional Achilles tendonitis.
And that sounds pretty self-explanatory.
It is. Here, the pain and swelling are located precisely at the spot where the Achilles tendon inserts, where it anchors right into the heel bone.
Right at the back of the heel bone itself.
Okay.
Okay. Now, you also mentioned something important earlier, distinguishing this from a rupture. Yes, absolutely critical. An Achilles tendon rupture is different. It's an acute injury, a sudden tear, usually happens in that same 2-6 centimeter area, the non-insertional zone.
Right.
And while it's typically a very dramatic event, sometimes severe tendonitis pain can occasionally be confused with a partial rupture.
Okay.
But here's the really crucial takeaway and something people worry about. Having Achilles tendonitis, even if it's painful, does not significantly increase your risk of a sudden complete rupture. That's a common misconception.
That's really good to clarify. So the pain doesn't mean it's about to snap.
Generally, no. And that distinction we talked about, non-insertional versus insertional, it's not just academic. It's fundamental.
Why is it so important?
Because it really dictates the whole diagnostic approach. And more importantly, the specific treatment plan. If you're dealing with pain in the main body versus right at the bone, the path to getting better can look quite different.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. So we know what it is, where it can happen. But who actually gets this? Who's most susceptible?
Yeah, who's at risk?
What makes someone more vulnerable? You often see this condition popping up in people maybe in their 30s and 40s. Is that right?
That's a very typical age range, yes. Although it can happen earlier or later.
And what are the risk factors?
Well, several things increase your risk. Increasing age is one, just sort of wear and tear over time.
Right.
But also, big one, sudden changes in activity level.
Ah, the weekend warrior syndrome.
Exactly. Or someone suddenly starting an intense new running program, maybe training for a marathon without proper buildup, or even returning to activity too quickly after, say, an ankle sprain or another injury.
Okay. Any medical conditions?
Yes. Conditions like diabetes and obesity are also known contributors. They can affect tendon health and healing.
Interesting. And what about the mechanics, how we move?
Ah, yes, the biomechanics. This is really key. One major factor is having a tight calf muscle. Medically, we call that an equinus contracture.
Equinus, like a horse.
Kind of, yeah. It means the ankle doesn't bend upwards sufficiently. Imagine your Achilles tendon, like a spring. If your calf is constantly tight, that spring is always under excess tension. It increases the load on the tendon with every single step.
Right, it's always being pulled taut.
Precisely. And here's a surprising one you touched on: shoe choice. Specifically, those shoes with a negative heel.
Where the heel is lower than the front of the foot.
Exactly. They're sometimes marketed, believe it or not, to tone calf
Oh, I've
muscles.
seen those.
Yeah. But what they actually do is dramatically increase the load stretching through the Achilles tendon. They can be a direct contributor to tendonitis.
Wow, that is counterintuitive. You think you're doing something good.
And you're actually overloading the structure you're trying to help. It's
Yeah.
a perfect example of why understanding the mechanics is so vital.
So connecting this all together, it sounds like it's often a story of overload.
That's a great way to put it. It is often a story of overload. The tendon is incredibly strong, incredibly resilient. But when it's pushed beyond its capacity, either too much load too quickly or chronic low-level overstress, it starts to suffer microscopic tearing, tiny little injuries within its fibers.
Okay.
And the body's natural response to these micro tears involves inflammation, swelling. Basically, the healing process kicks in. But that process itself is what causes the pain and stiffness you feel. It's the body trying to mend itself, but that mending process can be painful and definitely disrupt your function.
Right, the healing process itself causes the symptoms.
In large part, yes.
So if you're experiencing this kind of pain, you go to the doctor.
Yeah.
How do they figure out exactly what's going on? What does the diagnosis involve?
It nearly always starts with a thorough physical examination. That's the foundation.
What are they looking for?
Your physician will carefully check for specific areas of swelling, tenderness around the Achilles tendon. They'll pinpoint exactly where it hurts. Is it mid-tendon or right at the insertion? They might also be able to feel thickened or swollen tissue lining the tendon, especially if that peritonitis, the sheath inflammation, is part of the picture.
Okay, and I think you mentioned a specific test.
Yes, crucially, they'll perform the Thompson test. This is a quick, simple, but really effective test, mainly to rule out a complete Achilles tendon rupture.
How does that work?
You lie face down on the exam table with your feet hanging off the end. The doctor then firmly squeezes your calf muscle.
Okay.
If your Achilles tendon is intact, your foot should automatically point downwards, like you're pressing a gas pedal. Plantar flex.
Ah, the squeeze pulls the tendon, which moves the foot.
Exactly. If the foot doesn't move when the calf is squeezed, that's a very strong indicator of a rupture, a significant red flag.
Got it. So physical exam, Thompson test. What about imaging? X-rays, MRI.
Right. Imaging studies often play a role, but strategically. For instance, X-rays are usually negative for non-insertional tendonitis.
Meaning they look normal?
Pretty much. They don't show soft tissue well. Though sometimes in older patients with chronic issues, you might see some calcification within the tendon itself.
Okay.
However, for insertional tendonitis, an X-ray can be quite revealing. It might show a calcaneal spur, basically a bone spur right where the tendon attaches to the heel bone.
Ah, so the X-ray is more useful for the insertional type sometimes.
Often, yes. Then you have MRI. An MRI gives incredibly detailed pictures of soft tissues like tendons.
So that would show everything.
It shows a lot, yes. It can clearly show tendinosis, that degeneration within the tendon or inflammation, or rule out other problems. But here's the thing. It's generally not the first thing you jump to for a typical Achilles tendonitis diagnosis.
Why not?
Well, it's expensive, not always readily available, and often the clinical exam gives enough information to start treatment. An MRI is usually reserved for specific questions, like confirming a suspected partial tear, or if the diagnosis is unclear, or maybe if surgery is being considered down the line.
Okay, so it's used more selectively.
Exactly. A more readily available, less expensive alternative that's quite good for looking at tendons is ultrasound.
Ultrasound, like for babies.
Same technology, different application. It can give really good real-time images of the tendon structure and any inflammation. So the key point about imaging is using it strategically. It's not always about getting the most detailed image, but the most relevant one to guide the immediate clinical decisions.
That makes perfect sense. Use the right tool for the job.
Precisely.
Okay, so diagnosis is clear. Now, treatment. And you mentioned earlier, the really good news for most people is that this usually doesn't involve surgery, right?
That's absolutely correct. The vast majority of Achilles tendonitis cases can be managed very effectively with non-operative strategies.
That's a relief. So what's the general approach?
It usually involves an initial period focused on settling down the acute symptoms, the pain and swelling, and then, critically, a gradual and very carefully managed return to your normal activities. Patience is key.
Okay, let's dive into those non-operative elements. What's first?
First up is activity modification. This is non-negotiable.
Meaning, stop doing what hurts.
Essentially, yes. You need to identify and pause, or at least significantly reduce, activities that aggravate your symptoms. We're talking about things like running, jumping, lots of stair climbing, even walking uphill activities that put a lot of load through the Achilles, especially pushing off the front of your foot.
Right.
And if you've just started some intense new training program, probably smart to hit pause, let the Achilles settle, and then reevaluate that program, maybe build up more slowly.
Okay, modify activity. What else?
Shoe wear modification, hugely important.
We talked about avoiding those negative heel shoes.
Absolutely avoid those. But also just generally avoid any shoes that seem to worsen your pain. Often, well-fitted, supportive, comfort shoes are best during the healing phase.
Makes sense.
And interestingly, sometimes a shoe with a slight heel lift, maybe a quarter inch or so, either built in or an insert you put inside, can actually help.
How does that help?
It slightly elevates your heel, which reduces the constant stretch or tension on the Achilles tendon. It just gives it a bit of a break, helps to offload it.
Okay. Less tension. Got it. What about medications? Popping pills.
Well, medications like NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen or naproxen, can certainly be helpful for short-term symptom relief. They can help break that cycle of pain and inflammation.
But they're not a cure.
No, absolutely not a cure in themselves. They're a tool to manage symptoms, usually best used in combination with the other strategies, like activity modification and eventually exercises. They don't fix the underlying tendon issue.
Okay, now, injections. We hear about cortisone shots for other things.
Yeah.
What about for Achilles?
This is a really critical point. Corticosteroid injections directly into or around the Achilles tendon are generally not recommended
Why not?
because there's a documented risk that they can weaken the tendon tissue itself. And in some cases, this has unfortunately led to tendon rupture down the line. So the potential risks usually outweigh the benefits for Achilles tendonitis.
Wow, okay. Good to know. Avoid cortisone near the Achilles. What about other injections like PRP, platelet-rich plasma?
Ah, PRP. Yes, that's become quite popular to talk about. The idea is they take your own blood, spin it down to concentrate the platelets, which contain growth factors, and inject that back into the tendon to theoretically stimulate healing.
Sounds high tech. Does it work?
Oh, well, the theory is plausible, but honestly, right now, there's a lack of strong, high-quality scientific evidence to definitively prove that PRP injections are significantly better than traditional treatments or even better than a placebo injection for Achilles tendonitis.
So the jury's still out on PRP for this.
Very much so. More research is needed. For now, it's generally not considered a first-line treatment, especially given the cost, as it's often not covered by insurance.
Okay, so activity mod, shoes, maybe short-term NSAIDs, avoid cortisone, be skeptical about PRP for now. What really moves the needle then?
Right. What are the real game changers? In my view, for long-term recovery and prevention, it comes down to specific, targeted exercises. These are truly the cornerstone.
Exercises. Okay, what kind?
One of the first things, especially if testing reveals you have tight calf muscles, that Aquinas contracture we discussed, is consistent calf and Achilles stretching.
Just basic stretching.
Basic but crucial, and needs to be done correctly and regularly. Gentle, sustained stretches held for, say, 30 seconds, repeated several times a day. This helps reduce that baseline tension, that constant pull on the tendon, makes it less prone to micro tearing with activity.
Consistency is key, I imagine.
Absolutely. You can't just do it for a week. It needs to become part of your routine, especially if tightness is a contributing factor.
Okay, stretching, what else? Strengthening.
Yes. Next up are double leg heel raises. These are excellent for building endurance in the calf muscles and tendon.
How do you do those?
It's a high repetition, relatively low resistance exercise. The best way is usually standing on the edge of a step or stairs. Let your heels hang down slightly off the edge. This gives you a greater range of motion at the ankle. Then you slowly rise up onto the balls of both feet, hold for a second, and slowly lower back down. The focus is on slow, controlled movement, both up and down.
And how many?
You start gradually, maybe 5 sets of 5 repetitions, and then very slowly over weeks, you build up. The goal might eventually be 10 or even 15 sets of 15 repetitions, high volume.
Wow, that's a lot of reps.
It is, but it builds that tendon tolerance and calf endurance without excessively high loads. Again, slow, controlled progression is vital. Don't jump ahead too fast.
Right. And then there's another type of exercise often mentioned, eccentric.
Yes. Eccentric Achilles tendon exercises, often just called heel drops. These are particularly effective, and there's quite a bit of research supporting them for Achilles tendonitis, especially the non-insertional type.
What does eccentric mean in this context?
Eccentric contraction is when a muscle lengthens while it's contracting, while it's under tension. Think of slowly lowering a heavy weight. Your muscle is contracting to control the descent, but it's lengthening.
Okay, so how does that apply to the heel drop?
The classic technique involves standing on that same stair edge. You might rise up onto your toes using both legs. That's the concentric or shortening phase.
Okay, up on toes.
Then you lift the unaffected foot off the step, and you slowly lower your heel on the affected side down below the level of the step. That lowering phase is the eccentric loading of the Achilles.
Ah, so the work is done on the way down on one leg.
Exactly. That controlled lengthening underload seems to stimulate tendon remodeling and strength. You then use the good leg, or both legs, to get back up to the starting position to avoid overloading concentrically.
Got it. Variations.
Yes. You can adjust intensity. Doing it just lowering with one leg, unilateral, is harder than lowering with both, bilateral. You can also do it with your knee kept straight, which targets the big gastrocnemius calf muscle more. Or you can do it with your knee slightly bent, maybe 20, 30 degrees, which isolates the deeper soleus muscle and it's part of the Achilles. Often, a program includes both knee straight and knee bent versions.
And the goal for reps?
Again, gradual progression. A common target is eventually working up to something like 3 sets of 15 repetitions for both knee straight and knee bent versions.
And how often?
During the active treatment phase, these are often recommended maybe twice a day, 5-6 days a week. Once symptoms are well controlled, you might drop down to 3 times a week for maintenance to keep things strong and prevent recurrence.
That sounds like quite a commitment.
It is, but it often yields very good results if done correctly and consistently. Now, a critical safety note here. You need to approach these eccentric exercises cautiously, especially initially. They do put significant load through the tendon.
So don't just jump into 3 sets of 15.
Definitely not. And always warm up first, maybe 5-10 minutes on an exercise bike or some gentle movement before starting the heel drops. Listen to your body. Some discomfort during the exercise might be expected initially, but sharp pain or pain that gets worse afterwards means you need to back off or modify.
Okay, so stretching, high rep heel rises, and those controlled eccentric heel drops. It really sounds like the power of consistency and, you know, really getting the technique right is absolutely critical, not just for getting better, but for staying better.
Absolutely. It's about retraining the tendon to handle load appropriately again. It's not a quick fix, but it addresses the underlying capacity issue.
So what does this all mean for the long game? What happens if, you know, despite doing all this diligently, the activity mod, the shoes, the exercises, the pain just persists? It doesn't go away.
That does happen sometimes, although it's less common if the non-operative program is followed well. But yes, for a smaller percentage of patients, surgery might eventually become an option. It's typically considered a last resort, though.
Only after non-operative has really failed.
Correct. Usually, you'd want to see a good faith effort with a comprehensive non-operative program for at least, say, 6 months before seriously considering surgery.
And what does surgery involve? What are they actually doing in there?
It depends on the specifics, the type of tendonitis, the extent of damage, whether there's that calf tightness. Several procedures might be considered.
Suggest.
Common ones include debridement. That just means cleaning up the tendon, removing any damaged or degenerated tissue. Sometimes they might make small longitudinal incisions in the tendon to stimulate a healing response.
Okay, cleaning up.
If there are actual tears within the tendon, a tendon repair might be needed, suturing the torn fibers back together.
Right.
For those patients with that stubborn calf tightness, that Aquinas contracture that's contributing to the overload, the surgeon might perform a calf muscle lengthening procedure. Things like a Strayer procedure or a gastrocnemius recession. These basically release some of the tension in the calf muscle complex to decrease the chronic pull on the Achilles.
Addressing the root mechanical cause.
Exactly. And in cases where the tendon damage is really extensive, really severe, sometimes a tendon transfer is necessary. This involves using a nearby healthy tendon, often the one that flexes the big toe, the FHL tendon, and transferring it to help augment or essentially reinforce the diseased Achilles.
Wow, that sounds like a major procedure.
It is. All these surgeries are significant undertakings. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, surgical treatment is a real commitment, not just the operation itself, but the recovery.
What's recovery like?
It involves a period of post-operative immobilization, often starting in a cast, then transitioning to a walking boot, sometimes for several weeks or even a couple of months.
So no weight bearing initially?
Often limited weight bearing initially, yes. Followed by a very gradual reintroduction of range of motion exercises, and then slowly progressing strengthening exercises, usually under the guidance of a physical therapist.
How long does it take to get back to normal?
Recovery can be quite lengthy. It frequently takes 6 months, sometimes even longer, to achieve full recovery and get back to your previous activity levels, especially high-impact sports. Patience and adherence to the rehab protocol are absolutely critical.
Are there risks with surgery?
As with any surgery, yes. Potential complications can include infection, wound healing problems, nerve injury. Specific to Achilles surgery, there can be recurrence of symptoms, persistent ankle stiffness, or even the less common, a deep vein thrombosis, DVT, or blood clot, due to the immobilization.
So it's definitely not a decision to take lightly.
Not at all. And what's fascinating, or perhaps critical here, is how much the ultimate success, even with a technically perfect surgery, really hinges on patient compliance with the post-operative restrictions and therapy. It truly is a partnership between the patient, the surgeon, and the therapist to manage expectations and prevent recurrence or other issues.
Wow, okay. We've really covered the whole journey today, haven't we? From understanding the different types of Achilles tendonitis, what makes someone susceptible, how it's diagnosed accurately.
Mm-hmm. All the way through the non-operative treatments.
Right. The activity changes, the shoes, the crucial role of those specific exercises like heel drops. And then finally, what surgery looks like if it becomes necessary.
Yeah.
It's clear that really understanding the nuances of this condition, especially the details of that non-operative care, is incredibly valuable. And as always, getting that professional medical guidance is paramount if you're dealing with symptoms.
Absolutely. And this whole discussion, I think, raises an important question for you, the listener, to consider. How often do we tend to just push through those persistent aches and pains, you know, hoping they'll just go away on their own?
Yeah, we're all guilty of that sometimes.
We are, but understanding conditions like Achilles tendonitis empowers us. It helps us recognize when our body is sending a genuine signal, a real warning sign. And crucially, it encourages us to seek appropriate evidence-based care proactively, rather than letting what might be a relatively small issue snowball into a much bigger, more chronic problem.
Yeah, that's a great final thought. Be proactive. Listen to your body.
And remember, we've drawn today's insights from that excellent patient education resource, OrthEducation.com. As we said, this deep dive is for general educational purposes only, so for any personal medical advice or diagnosis, please consult your own healthcare professional. Thanks so much for joining us for this deep dive.